real occupation. My dear wife knew that I had business in the city, but she little knew what.
You fooled us all, Mrs. Sinclair. I should think even the Commissioner might have dropped a few shillings in your cap over the years.
Very probably. Well, last Monday, I had finished for the day and was dressing in my room above the opium den when I looked out of my window and saw, to my horror and astonishment, that my wife was standing in the street with her eyes fixed full upon me. I gave a cry of surprise, threw up my arms to cover my face, and rushing to my confidant, the Lascar, entreated him to prevent anyone from coming up to me. I threw off my clothes, pulled on those of a beggar, and put on my pigments and wig. Even a wife's eyes could not pierce so complete a disguise. But then it occurred to me that there might be a search in the room, and that the clothes might betray me. I threw open the window, reopening by my violence a small cut which I had inflicted upon myself in the bedroom that morning. Then I seized my coat, which was weighted by the coppers which I had just transferred to it from the leather bag in which I carried my takings. I hurled it out of the window, and it disappeared into the Thames. The other clothes would have followed, but at that moment there was a rush of constables up the stair, and a few moments after I found, rather I confess to my relief, that instead of being identified as Mr. Neville Sinclair, I was arrested as his murderer. Well, gentlemen, I do not know there is anything else for me to explain. I was determined to preserve my disguise as long as possible, and hence my preference for a dirty face. Knowing that my wife would be terribly anxious, I slipped off my ring and confided it to the Lascar at a moment when no constable was watching me, together with a hurried scrawl telling her that she had no cause to fear.
That note only reached her yesterday.
Good God. What a week she must have spent.
We've been keeping a watch on that Lascar, so it would have been difficult for him to post a letter unobserved. Probably handed it to one of his sailor customers who forgot all about it for some days.
That was it. I have no doubt of it.
Mr. Sinclair, this begging must stop. If we are to hush this thing up, there must be no more of Hugh Boone.
I have sworn it by the most solemn oath which a man can take.
And in that case, I think it's probable that no further steps may be taken. But if you're found again, then all must come out.
I understand.
And all that remains to say is we're very much indebted to you, Mr. Holmes, for having cleared the matter up. Though I wish I knew how you reached your results.
I reached this one by sitting on five pillows and consuming an ounce of shag. Watson, I feel there is just one more matter we must attend to before we can say this particular adventure has been brought to a satisfactory conclusion.
Now, you mean we should let Mrs. Sinclair know all is well?
I think we can safely leave that to her husband.
Of course.
I was thinking more along the lines that if we drive with all possible haste to Baker Street, I believe we shall just be in time for breakfast. Good day, gentlemen.
In The Man with the Twisted Lip, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Merrison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. Hugh Boone, alias Neville Sinclair, was played by Robin Herford, with Danielle Allen as Mrs. Sinclair, Emma Gregory as Kate Whitney, George Winter as Isa Whitney, Elizabeth Mansfield as Mary Watson, David Googe as Inspector Bradstreet, David Bannerman as Constable Tompkins, and Angus Wright as Constable Horden. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Man with the Twisted Lip was dramatized for radio by Peter Mackey, produced by Enid Williams, and directed by Patrick Rayner.